Broadcasting from scenic Ann Arbor, Michigan, this is The Koreaphile, a bi-weekly podcast about music, culture, and society from around the peninsula. I'm Andre Goulet. On this episode... In 2004, an agreement was reached between the United States and South Korean governments to relocate the United States forces Korea from the heart of Seoul to Camp Humphreys outside the mid-sized city of Pyeongtaek and to a second major garrison outside of Daegu. The process, scheduled to be completed next year, will consolidate more than 28,000 troops into two regional hubs and will transform Camp Humphreys into the largest U.S. Army garrison in Asia. As the population of the garrison increases from 12,000 soldiers, family members, and contractors to 37,000 in 2016, the city of Pyeongtaek, in cooperation with the central South Korean government, have developed ambitious plans. These include a major Samsung semiconductor chip plant, the world's largest fuel cell power plant, an expanded maritime port, a free economic zone, as well as tens of thousands of new housing developments. UC Berkeley's Bridget Martin is researching the links between militarism and urbanization in South Korea. In the second of our two-part conversation, she talks about the intensity of South Korean urban redevelopment, the goals behind USFK base consolidation and restructuring, and the historical relationship between American military bases and South Korean society. Bridget, let's take a moment to frame what's going on in Pyeongtaek right now. How would you describe that?
Sure. There are a lot of big development projects going on in Pyeongtaek right now. And it has actually been my project over the summer to figure out, or to try to start figuring out, what's driving all of that. All of those projects, and I look at them from a territorial perspective.
And I should point out that your academic background is geography, right?
Right. I'm a third-year PhD student in geography at the University of California, Berkeley. Yeah.
So frame it a little more.
So when I first arrived, I'll just tell it through my personal journey. When I first arrived in Pyeongtaek, I tried to make a map of all of the projects going on. So you have a place called Brain City. You know, you have a place called... KDB Utoplex. You have all these, you know, Goduck New International City, Yellow Sea Free Economic Zone, Pyeongtaek Lake Tourist Zone, you know, a whole bunch of housing complexes, Pyeongtaek Port. And this is all happening in this 452 square kilometer area, which just, you know, makes you wonder, like, what's going on here? And I was originally thinking about the Camp Humphreys expansion as just another project. But actually, there was a special act passed in 2003 that went into effect in 2004 that lifted a bunch of the development restrictions in Pyeongtaek. So there's been this sort of development craze happening, and not to mention the fact that the central government gave a bunch of money, like billions of dollars, for various projects around the city. So it looks like Pyeongtaek is booming. It's hard to say if it really is. There's a building frenzy going on right now. I mean, the city, and I think the central government too, expects the population to grow to 860,000 people. You know, that's like a nearly a doubling of the population. And where are those people going to come from? If you look at the population statistics, something like 200,000 of the people that they're hoping to get, they are categorized as working in the construction industry and in the building industry. So they're building houses to house people who are building houses. So who knows if the apartments will fill up eventually, but, you know, it really runs contrary to the myth that Korea doesn't have enough land. That's why we have to build these high-rise apartments. Mm. You know, the planning is happening, and they're just hoping to draw people to the locality.
This is commutable from Seoul. It's about an hour outside of town, so... I mean, it just becomes another part of the greater metropolis.
You know, I thought that, and I'm thinking now specifically about the Goduck New International City project, which is meant to be home to like 140,000 people. And like, you know, most new city projects in Korea are planned by the central government because they want to facilitate decongestion of the Seoul area, right? But actually, I talked with someone from LH, and you know, a quite high-level person working on that project, and he said, no, actually, no one's going to, you know, people are not going to come live in Pyeongtaek and buy these apartments and then commute to Seoul. No way. This new city project is basically compensation to Pyeongtaek for accepting the base.
Exactly. So their part of all this expansion is the spinning of the base expansion. Now, the Camp Humphreys and the Osan Air Force Base, the American military is restructuring and has been for like a decade. So what they're doing is consolidating troops on the peninsula into fewer areas around the country, including in Pyeongtaek. So this base will be expanding dramatically, pretty big expansion.
Pretty big expansion.
So the Pyeongtaek stuff, which is all about that urban expansion, is happening hand in hand with the base expansion. So I want to talk for a minute about the association we have with Korean cities where there's major American military installations. You talked about the bars, the sex trade, the basic carousing, and then the fact that you have hundreds or thousands of people who aren't really engaged in their community in maybe that productive of a way. Not that there's not things that the American military would do in a communal way, but so what other Korean cities have developed into being essentially base cities?
Actually, Dongducheon up in Area 1, which Area 1 is basically all of the installations up by the DMZ. So Dongducheon is the best example of that, and that's where Camp Casey is. It's actually, through my research, have discovered it's not actually quite accurate. It's not totally clear whether or not the consolidation is going to happen, because what they did up in Dongducheon is they started just sending deployed troops there. So these are single guys, young guys, and I'm mostly guys, that's why I'm using that term, but who, you know, really have, you know, not a lot to do outside the base besides maybe, you know, hit the bars. Whereas, you know, soldiers who bring families or soldiers who have more long-term investment in the area might have more to do off base. I think besides what's going on in Area 1 and what's going on in Pyeongtaek, I don't know. Actually, I don't know that I can answer that.
That's okay.
About other bases. Like, but what's basically what's been happening in relation to basing in Korea has been the expansion and contraction of these like camp town areas. Because since the Korean War, the base structure has basically been the Cold War structure. It's like a lot of little bases all over the place, especially up near the DMZ. And so this consolidation process is happening at a moment when South Korean redevelopment is, you know, as everyone who visits this country can see, pretty intense. So that's really the intersection I'm trying to look at, and that's really apparent in Pyeongtaek.
How well does the American military integrate in Korean society, or how well has it integrated historically?
I could really only speak to what's going on in Pyeongtaek. I just actually last night interviewed probably around 15 people, almost all men and almost all white men, actually, of different ages. And I'm going to expand my sample once I, you know, I'm going to go out again next Friday. It was just, you know, who was there at the moment. But I think there's a lot of frustration from members of the military who are stationed in Pyeongtaek. They feel misperceived, especially by Koreans that don't want them here. And they also face a few structural barriers that don't allow them to get out into the community, like, you know, newly enlisted or non-ranking members can't have cars. They have to fill out 9 or 10 pages of paperwork if they want to leave the neighborhood. And they're all sort of corralled into these areas, which turn into camp towns. Like, you know, around the base, for example, vendors aren't allowed to sell alcohol in certain places, so that there's sort of, the soldiers become concentrated in these little areas, which are just, you know, filled with bars. And some of the older soldiers who've been around for a while, you know, they don't really like to hang out in that area. But I think there's a general sense that, you know, if one service member does something wrong, for example, assaults someone, you know, that's probably the most common example, they all get punished. and the entire image of the military is affected. And so they really do, I mean, just based on these conversations, I think it's hard for them to integrate, and they're very worried about being misperceived. They don't have a lot of investment in the community.
Is there anything else you can say about the broader reorganization of the USFK?
One interesting thing that I've found is that there isn't a lot of publicly available information, number one, which has made research difficult. And also, some of the bases up north that are meant to be closing aren't actually closing down. They just have now sent deployed troops up there. And I think it's, they call it, the base reorganization will be situation dependent. So when things cool down on the border, maybe they can, you know, actually close some of the installations. But there are, you know, protests about this up in Dongducheon especially.
I want to talk about that. So yeah. The citizens in Pyeongtaek and Dongducheon, like, they're used to having the military around.
Yeah.
How have they reacted to having an expansion, a proposed expansion of the base, as well as the economic development? What's your sense of that?
I think I could speak better about Pyeongtaek. It's actually really interesting. I attended a public meeting recently, you know, with various community leaders talking about the base expansion, all in Korean, so I only caught like 70% of it. it's quite hard topic. But it is interesting. There aren't many people asking, you know, should the military be here at all? This is supposed to be a community debate, community forum discussion, you know, open conversation.
So what did they talk about?
They just talked about the ways in which they can maximize their own community benefit from the presence of USFK. Mm-hmm. So I saw, for example, a presentation by a professor from Pyeongtaek University about, you know, how we can become a hub, or how Pyeongtaek can become a hub city and become linked to the global economy through internationalization. But, you know, other people talked about how they wanted to create casinos and tourism zones and try to get the soldiers to live, you know, away from posts and in the community in these, you know, new high-rise towers that are coming up at Godok International New City. But actually what I've found is there's no systematic way of integrating the soldiers into the broader life of the community. You know, getting them to live in these apartments. I mean, who's to say if they'll want to live there?
The community has had several generations to live side by side with a base.
Right.
Is this why they are focused on the economic benefits and not reacting in ways that other places, I'm thinking on Jeju, I'm thinking Okinawa in Japan, some places don't want a base around. So I'm just wondering why Pyeongtaek doesn't have any sort of reaction to that.
There are, like, the Pyeongtaek Peace Center, I think, would be the place from which the strongest opposition is coming.
So there are people, there are activists.
Absolutely. But a lot of that activism surrounded the dispossessions that happened in 2006 in order to create room for the base expansion in Daeduri and Daetori villages. But the activism tends to fixate focus on issues like noise from helicopters, crimes committed by soldiers. It's very specific complaints, which the U.S. military really tries to address. Well, some of it they try to address. I think it's hard for the activists to, you know, in concrete terms, come up with a really strong anti-imperialism isn't a good enough reason at the locality. They have to make a concrete case, you know, this is how this base is adversely affecting our community. It's the helicopter noise, it's the criminality of the soldiers, environmental pollution, things like that. The vast majority, you know, from the local vendors actually protested the Godok International New City development because they think They're under the impression that U.S. soldiers will be living, you know, far away from where they're doing their vending, which probably actually isn't the case. But you know, it's there. You start to see this sort of interest-based politics. It's not, you know, pro-American or anti-American. It's just different groups, like different construction companies, you know, arguing about who's going to get the contract or who's going to get, you know, the apartment complex where the Americans are going to live. It's that kind of conversation that's happening. And maybe, you know, it's a kind of way of deflecting from this bigger question of whether the military should be there at all.
Is this a post-imperialism kind of imperialism, though, where, like, the people being occupied don't recognize it as an occupation, and the people doing the occupying don't see themselves as an occupational force?
I would have to look up the technical definition of occupation. You know, the U.S. has an agreement with ROK. You know, there's a status of forces agreement under which the whole thing is governed. But it is funny. It's like, let me put it this way. Militarism could be coming synonymous in a certain way with development. And it's not just camp town development. It's a much, much broader kind of development, which, you know, comes from, you know, this sort of neo-developmental tendencies we see everywhere in Korea. And that is something new that I haven't seen anywhere else. And that, yeah.
Bridget, you used the word cascading to describe the relationships before, and you've also used the word imbricated in your writing to describe the relationship between American imperialism and development in South Korea. So what's the definition of this word imbricated?
I think you wrote, I have it written down. So you have it written down right there.
It's, yeah,
tiled,
arranged, yeah, so they overlap like roof tiles.
Right.
I thought that's such a lovely way of describing the twinning of imperialistic interests and development interests.
You know, and actually, I'm able to say that because a wonderful paper came out, and I think it was 2004, by Jim Glassman and Young Jin Che, who's a professor here at SNU, which talks about construction contracting and basically how. They focus on the Hyundai case and how Hyundai developed in a big way through its wartime construction contracting in Vietnam, but also in Thailand and also in Guam. And then it came back and started building South Korea, like quite literally. But that's one way in the construction industry, which is a huge chunk of how the Chaebols developed, by the way, grew through its relationship with U.S. imperialism. And we see that same kind of relationship continue today. I mean, the base itself, it's Daelim, it's SK, it's Samsung. All of these companies are building the actual base itself. But what's new is this sort of, cascading effects, or all of these the easing of restrictions or the subsidies that the central government has given Pyeongtaek. So these are sort of the indirect effects of accepting the base, but still we see militarism and urbanism connected. But it's not just the construction contracting story that we've seen before, although that is continuing as well. So it's still imbricated. But they're starting to intertwine in new and unexpected ways through these different regulatory and planning regimes, which, you know, you haven't seen before.
So what are your goals in the time you have remaining in Pyeongtaek and in South Korea?
Well, I've only got like a week left for this trip.
You're heading home in a week?
Well, I'm going to Europe. I sound very fancy, don't I? I'm going to Europe. And going back to California for a couple of weeks. And in the fall, I'm actually going to be a visiting researcher at the Korean Research Institute for Human Settlements. So I will actually have access at that point to the statistics and to the maps, you know, all of the data that the central government has, at least that think tank has. So that's their sort of, that's their main territorial planning think tank. So I will be able to give much more precise answers to all of these questions, you know. So I'll be working there until January, on this and continuing this project.
Bridget Martin is researching the links between militarism and urbanization in South Korea. She is a grad student at UC Berkeley. Thanks for speaking with the Korea Fund.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
You can find new episodes of The Korea File on iTunes and Stitcher, and as a feature contributor at KoreaFM.net, KoreaBridge.net, ESLROK.com, and BlogTalkRadio.org. If you like what you hear, like us on Facebook, and please leave a review of the show wherever you subscribe. It'll help new listeners discover the show. Then, check back here on October 28th for a live performance and interview with Seoul indie band Used Cassettes. Until then, thanks for listening. From Ann Arbor, Michigan, I'm Andre Goulet.